Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Today is Tuesday, August 19th, 2014. This is News One Now with Roland Martin. Certainly glad to be with you on this day. We, of course, will be focused all day on the issue of what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri. More unrest last night. 31 people arrested with the various protests. National Guard, they are in Ferguson, Missouri. You also have, of course, you had tear gas. You had more strife there. It is unbelievable what is happening in Ferguson, Missouri. Yesterday, President Barack Obama held a news conference. He announced the Attorney General Eric Holder will be making his way to Ferguson tomorrow, meeting with FBI investigators, but also community leaders, trying to bring some peace and calm to that part of the country. I'm just not sure that is going to do the trick. You now have people who are traveling from other parts of the country who are coming in. And so the question now becomes, who's actually protesting? And what's interesting when you begin to examine what's happening here, you have different things going on. You have, of course, you have these peaceful protests happening in the daytime, but then the chaos ensues at nighttime. And so it is just one thing after another. And to be frank, I don't see how these protests are going to stop. And I believe that a large part of this is a result of a tremendous lack of leadership. First and foremost, there's a lack of leadership when it comes to city officials. Think about it. When is the last time you've seen the mayor? Normally in a situation like this, a mayor of a city is everywhere. They are on television, they are on radio, they are leading. I can't tell you the last time we saw the mayor of Ferguson. Where's the city manager in Ferguson? Where's the city council in Ferguson? But then you had St. Louis Alderman Antonio French, who also said, where's black leadership in St. Louis? You have all these young folks running around at nighttime, throwing rocks and bottles and things along those lines. And I keep hearing these reports of Molotov cocktails, but you never see the evidence of it. So where are those leaders? Where are those individuals? I mean, you've got, it's so funny. Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly despise Malik Zulu Shabazz, former national chairman of the New Black Panther Party. But he's out there actually talking to folks, trying to get these young folks to calm down. He was seen last night on television as well as on live web streams trying to get people to tamp down, saying this is unnecessary. Then you have all these people who are saying we're fed up, we're angry, we're tired. Okay, but what's your game plan? And again, I get fed up, angry, and tired, but I also say you would have a game plan. What are you trying to achieve? Is it the expression of anger just because it is the expression of anger? Exactly what is it? And that's the struggle. That is the struggle that is happening there. And until you have leadership, until you have people who are willing to step up, until you have folks who have the courage to lead, this is going to continue. It is not going to change. It is not going to get better. It is going to get worse. And I simply don't see. I really don't see it. I don't see how this truly gets fixed. That's what I don't see. I don't see, and I think we're going to, I think every night we're going to keep seeing this. And the answer is not more police. The answer is you got 200 National Guard troops. The answer is not sending in 200 more. That's not what it is. That's simply not what it is. Taking your phone calls, folks, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Love to get your thoughts, your perspective on this issue. Coming up next, we'll be chatting with Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., who has been to Ferguson, Missouri. Get his thoughts as well. Number to call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. You can hit me on Twitter at News One or at Roland S. Martin. Also, go to the News One Facebook page, or you can try me, of course, on my Facebook page as well. We're going to be breaking down Ferguson all day today. We got a great show lineup for you, so sit back, and it's time for us to do what we do. 7 after the hour, this is News One Now with Roland Martin.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
12 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Folks, we'll talk about Ferguson. You can give me a call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. What do you think? What do you think is going to quell the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri? What do you think is going to quell the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri? We will talk about that by taking your phone calls. Right now, though, I want to go to the founder of Rainbow Push, Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., who joins us right now. Reverend, you spent time this week last week in Ferguson. We see the unrest continue. 31 people arrested. More drama there. And I'll ask you the question, what is it going to take to have peace at night? Because it is a stark difference between what is happening in the daytime and then what is happening at nighttime.
Well, Roland, there is an element determined to a plan balance as a diversion. Somehow they think it's a measure of power. Is it really a distraction that weakens our case? The headline should be, after 10 days, police who killed Michael Brown has not even been interrogated. He's not even a suspect yet. You lose the fact he's not even a suspect yet. You lose all that, the Molotov cocktail on rock. And the other bigger issue to me, one, it was 7 days before they called his name, never full disclosure of him. Michael shot 6 times in broad daylight, laying in the sun for 4 hours to rot before his parents and before their eyes. And the guys who did the killing, not even a suspect. That's a powerful story all by itself. More powerful than a Molotov cocktail is the public execution. And I would hope that the protests will continue and that they would distinguish those who would distract from the issue, from the validity of the protest itself.
But Reverend, on that particular point, and I'll get to the officer, I'll get to that. But do you not have a crisis of leadership there where you have young folks at nighttime who don't want to listen to anybody? You got people out there. You have Anthony Shaheed. You got the Fruit of Islam. You got Nation of Islam. You got Malik Zulu Shabazz. You got local organizers, and they're blowing them off. You see the throwing of rocks and bottles and things along those lines. How do you get even if it's a small element, even if it's this, if it's 20, 30, 40 people, how do you get them to understand that you throwing rocks and bottles at the police is not helping the cause?
Well, sometimes I get the impression that they don't want to hear. I remember at some point, the last demonstration Dr. King led, Roland, the focus was the garbage workers, the sanitation workers, and the need to get collective bargaining. At the end of the line, that was an element that threw rocks in the windows to get the attention of the press, and they were successful. And that was all a web undermining Dr. King, and it was at that point. And so that was under Christ of leadership. Dr. King was providing real leadership, but their sense of outrage and outrageousness was a problem.
But Reverend Jackson, correct me if I'm wrong though, because and obviously you were there, and but all the accounts that I've read, whether it is in various books and stories, is that that you had the FBI who was trying to, who was behind those provocateurs, and that what ended up happening was the next day or the day after, there was a second protest where Dr. King, as well as his lieutenants, made perfectly clear that they were going to be more in control of what was happening, and there was a much more peaceful march that took place.
Yeah, but if you have a group set, for example, if somebody throws a Molotov cocktail, they planned the chaos. They planned. There's always an element that they've explored the crowd they didn't create. I was down to Ferguson until last night, and rolling massive, nonviolent, disciplined protests. I mean, the community aroused. And what's lost in that, besides the police not even being a suspect yet, in that community, 21,000, if 5,000 blacks register to vote, they can serve on juries, they can elect the mayor who appoints police and fire chief, they can elect judges. They have absolutely what difference between, say, in the case of Matt Davis and Lemon Till, when they were killed, it took us 40 years to bring the killers to justice. They have the power in that town with 5,000 voters to transform the whole government. They actually have power, and that power is being dissipated by the rock throwing element. Well, really, some of them rolling just flat out misguided.
Well, I'm glad you made that point, because again, you hear the complaints about the police department and city officials. And you're right. You know, a town of 21,000 people last election, there are 15,000 people in that town who are 18 years or older in the last election, and 1,500 people voted.
Indeed. So my point is, as I said to them, as I went from house to house, that you can't even serve on a jury unless you're a registered voter. So in Trayvon Martin's case, we had big crowds on the outside, nobody in the jury box because they were not registered. Well, the registration matters. Registration means you can become a juror. In this case, Roland, they can become a juror. They have the power to elect a mayor and a city council.
School board.
They don't have a black on the city council. They don't have a black on the school board. They don't have a black city comptroller. All these offices belong to them. So what we've begun in the Rainbow is working on a drive. I spent most of all the yesterday drive with the housing project where Michael was killed, going door to door, doing absolute and convincing them that registration matters. Men have become so clinical, so withdrawn, they don't think that the registration really matters, and it really does.
Reverend, hold tight 1 second. I'm going to a break right now. We'll take, I got some more questions for you about next steps, because there has to be a plan. To me, standing out there and protesting and arguing and yelling and taunting the police and throwing the rocks does nothing if you don't have a plan. All you're doing is just yelling, screaming, and acting a fool. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. 20 after the hour, this is News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
24 after the hour, welcome back, News One Now. Folks, we're talking about what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri. The unrest there, And so the question I'm posing, what's next? What is the game plan? What is next there for Ferguson? Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. joins us. And before we went to the break, Reverend, you talked about the importance of voting. And again, I go back to having an action plan. What is, What's the organization on the ground, Reverend? Who is leading? Who is local folks? You know, who is stepping up, recognizing that you can stand out there and protest on one hand, but you've also got to change it. You've got a county prosecutor there. People question Bob McCullough, whether he's willing to do what's right. Well, who's going to actually be stepping up? What is actually happening there in terms of an action plan?
Local leadership on the ground was ministers like Reverend Bobo or Reverend Freddie Clark or Minister Bass. There's a vast number of ministers. The Coalition of Black Faith Unions, NAACP, National Action Network. You see a lot of leadership on the ground. Part of the provocation, let's hit that first before I get to this next step, is that when the police chief, in an insulting way, chooses to not allow the name of the police officer to be released for 7 days, and when doing so, a discrediting tape on Michael, which is disconnected from actual why he got killed. He didn't get killed as a suspect in the first place, and that, of course, was an act of provocation. Then Michael was the autopsy came out, and even though it is out, he's clearly was shot in a very violent way. They've not even charged the killer as he's not even a suspect yet. That adds fuel to the fire. Then there's an element, Roland, that's determined, and we've always had to deal with this in these demonstrations, an element that they cannot draw a crowd but can draw attention. And that's the source. That's the Molotov cocktail element. They cannot draw a crowd, but they can distort a march.
But again, no, Reverend, but here's the deal, though. All right. So you have organized leadership in the daytime where you have these peaceful protests. Don't you have to have those same leaders who are there and in force at nighttime to drown out those individuals, but also try to say, look, guys, this is not where we're supposed to be?
Well, that element has its own agenda, and the devil deals differently in the dark than it does in the light. And I said to Ron Johnson yesterday, don't say the marches are in chaos. Determine whoever don't sweep justice. Whoever is throwing them all top cut, they get them. In the meantime, my focus has been on the next steps. Is going door to door, doing massive registration. People that do not feel empowered, that's why they didn't vote. They feel disenfranchised mentally and emotionally. But here, again, that's unlike the case of Medgar and Emmett Till. This community has the power to transform its politics overnight. I mean, I said to a group of young people yesterday in front of when Michael was shot, I said, you know that you can become the judge? Yes, you can become the judge. You can become a juror. Or you can become the mayor. You can appoint police and fire chiefs. It was as if it was starting in the first grade. They had no idea the power they are throwing away. So I spent most of my time down there speaking to small groups and church groups about the effective use of their power, which they've given up on and must not give up, and they must not stop marching. In the meantime, Eric Cole is coming in tomorrow, and the Department of Justice must not only deal with the killer, they must, you cannot, these police and fire departments, Roland, have federal grants that they have standards they must reach. 56 police, 3 African-American, firemen, 0. They cannot keep federal government grants and have that kind of hiring record. It's not just a matter. If you have 50-50 police and fire department, male and female, black and white, you have a different city in Ferguson today. That must be our end game in this situation. But I also think this is a metaphor for urban America. This is for Ferguson. The same element of pain and unemployment and rejection is in all these major cities.
877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Reverend, now all of a sudden you have folks talking, you have so-called witnesses coming out, things along those lines. Then you, of course, now you have the medical examiner so-called releasing, saying that Mike Brown was on marijuana. Is it offensive to sit here to have the medical examiner say they're not going to release the autopsy report, but then they come out and say after the family releases theirs, oh, he was shot several times. And then they say, well, we're not going to say anything because the toxicology reports take six to eight weeks. But all of a sudden they're leaking, oh, he's on marijuana. People can't trust what they're hearing from this government.
Well, see, those kind of leaks is what's adding fuel to the fire. whenever the police releases, or he stole some cigars, or he's on marijuana, that is a way of justifying why he got killed, as if smoking marijuana is a death warrant, and it is not. And that is, talking about Molotov cocktails by night, Trello leaks coming out by day. That's the stuff that fuels the fire. I mean, the minute this guy is seen as a suspect and faces interrogation, it could affect the climate very radically.
All right. Reverend, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Roland, follow me at Rev J. Jackson. Like me, Reverend Jesse L. Jackson Sr., please.
All right. Thanks a bunch. Folks, we'll take your phone calls when we come back. 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
23 before the top of the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. That was Paul Robeson from, of course, the CD Words Like Freedom. Paul Robeson, one of the greatest freedom fighters our country, the world, has ever known. Welcome back. We're talking about Ferguson right here on News One Now, taking your phone calls. Number to call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina, listening via the internet. Francois, you're on News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning, Roland. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
I have a question. Consider all this going on in Ferguson and other cities in the United States. Do you think that the race relations between African Americans and cops will ever get better to a point that... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say to a point where, you know, everyone can be civil and, you know, people can get, you know, just be treated fairly, pretty much.
Well,
I'm just curious.
I think first and foremost, what you have to have is, there are examples where you have community policing, where you have relationships that exist. But look, anytime you have police departments that are there for other reasons, you're going to have some people who don't like cops. I mean, just pure and simple. Who don't look? You got folks who not just black folks. I mean, look how the Clive and Bundy people responded, came out with their guns, whatever these. And look how for years conservatives have complained about these, you know, jackbooted thugs, DEA people, whatever. So you have a natural anger towards law enforcement. That ain't a black thing. That's an American thing. But
right.
I do believe, though, you have to have, this is why you have to have people on the police forces who are diverse, people who are from the community, people who understand what folks are going through, people who understand what is going on. And that's really what you got to deal with. And so it's one of those things that you're always going to have that tension there, but you do have to have the relationship. But that's where trust comes in, transparency comes in. Give you an example. Charlotte, North Carolina. Let me tell you, this is what happens when you have the right leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Remember last year, Jonathan Farrell was a young man, former football player at FAMU. Remember, he had a car accident.
Yeah.
And he went knocked on doors.
Yes.
Cops got called. They roll up. He approached the car. I'm looking for help, looking for help. All of a sudden, you have this police officer, Randall Carrick, fires several shots at him, striking him 10 times. Soon after, the police chief came out and said, point blank, his actions were wrong. Farrell got indicted. And in fact, what you had, because first of all, remember, the first grand jury refused to indict Carrick on voluntary manslaughter charges. They went to a second grand jury. And in fact, the DA recused himself from the case. But in this case, you had a black police chief who stood up and said, the actions of this officer were wrong. They were transparent. He was charged soon after. He was later indicted. They were not hiding by saying, well, we're not going to release his name. Not going to do it. That didn't happen. That's what happens when you have transparency, when you have real leadership.
Absolutely.
All right. I appreciate it, Francois.
Thank you so much, Roland.
Thanks, sir. Let's go to Fred in Atlanta, listening via WAOK. Fred, you're on News 1 9 with Roland Martin.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
I think this situation is only going to get a little worse because I don't think this cop is going to be arrested, charged, convicted. Matter of fact, they're going to determine that this was a okay shoot, that he acted within his procedure.
Okay.
They have over a dozen witnesses right now. They say they cooperate, the officers, story. And the forensics.
Okay, hold on one second. You said they. Who's they?
The police. The police have reported through sources. They just said it on Fox News that there are over a dozen witnesses that cooperate. That kind of stuff comes out in trial. But let's also look at the autopsy. And again, I'm looking at this like a defense attorney would look at it. In order to surrender, it takes two things.
Okay, hold on one second. First of all, you say let's look at the autopsy. We have not seen the actual autopsy from St. Louis County.
I'm talking about the one that the guy did for the family.
Now, remember, the autopsy Dr. Michael Bodden performed, he didn't have access to witnesses, testimony. He didn't have access to the clothing of Mike Brown. So he admitted there were some things he did not have.
Right. And he's also said this morning that his autopsy, he has seen the official autopsy, and he said it's been completely consistent with that one. But let's look at the autopsy. Now, in order to surrender, you have to have two things in place. You have to be stationary. Two, you have to have your hands up. You can't be moving toward the officer and say you're surrendering. You can't have your hands somewhere other than up in the air. And that's what everybody's saying. His hands are straight up in the air. So the autopsy says he was shot in the arm at least four or five times.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that this police officer who goes to the range and is trained, every officer in the country is trained to aim for center body mass, that he shot intentionally five or four times into his arm as it was suspended up in the air.
Okay, first of all, you assume he knew how to shoot. That's first.
Well, okay, he has to qualify every year. Well, again,
Here's the deal, though. You don't have access. Do you have trajectory? No.
Excuse me?
No, you don't have trajectory. What did they say at the beginning of that news conference? As a medical examiner, we examine the body as it was lying on the table, not the position the person was actually in. So you don't know trajectory. We don't know.
So you think the police officer was up in the air?
I don't.
Left?
Fred, I don't know. We do not have enough information.
Okay.
I am not going to render a judgment as to what happened when we don't know.
Okay, well, all I'm saying is that
Fred, hold on. I'm going to. Fred, you keep saying, look at the evidence. You don't have the evidence, Fred. You don't even have the witness testimony. You probably have 5% of the information, so you're rendering a judgment based upon 5% of knowledge.
And everybody else is as well. They all have concluded
No, they have not. You don't, Fred, you don't know this, and so I'm not going to render a judgment based upon 5% information. I got to go to a break. I got to go to a break. 16. I got to go to a break. 16 before the top of the hour. This is News 1 Now. Rolling.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black Thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland
10 Martin. Before the top of the hour. Welcome back, News 1 Now. Number to call is 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. Fred from Atlanta, finish your comment.
All I'm asking is for people, take a minute, okay? The same thing happened with the Trayvon Martin case. It was just, he had Skittles and iced tea and
You're asking people to take a minute. Well, first of all, no, remember, the same thing what you had in Trayvon, you had an absence of information, and that's what you have here. The fundamental problem here is that you have a police department that is being extremely selective in the information they send out, not being trustworthy in what they send out, and so you're sort of like, well, I don't know if I should even believe what you're even saying. That's what you have going on here.
Well, then why do you believe the other side, though? I hear people calling
because,
in on your speech
because
CMA,
guess what, Fred? Because Fred, guess
he
what?
Was shot down
because
like a dog
Fred, because people, because Fred, people out there actually take sides. Shocking, duh. You got
okay, well,
Fred.
Saying,
you got
the
you got
evidence is what's going to determine the case.
Well, guess
and the
what,
outcome.
Fred? In the Fred, in the absence of the police releasing information, people are going to take a position. Duh.
Okay, but what makes more sense? That the cop was aiming for his center body mass?
You don't even know. You
can't,
you, okay, you're saying what makes more sense? Hell, it don't make sense in a town of 67% black. You only got 3 black cops on a police force of 53 people. Hell, you trying to say what makes sense?
Well, I'm just saying in terms of the history of policing,
Fred,
how police shoot.
Fred,
they shoot for center body mass.
Fred, that, you assuming the dude know how to shoot.
Because he has to
Fred,
qualify every year
Fred,
on a gun range.
Fred, shooting, Fred shooting on a gun range is not the same when all of a sudden
okay.
you shooting live.
All right. So any wild speculation in order to still try to
and that's what you're doing. No, what you're doing,
on his
Fred,
knees
you are, Fred, you, Fred,
up.
You are speculating right now. You do not know. You do not know at all. You don't have any.
And nor do you, nor does anybody else
and
call
Fred,
in here.
And Fred, have I sat here and rigid a judgment? No, I have not. What have I said?
We have to do something about this. Yo, black boys being shot down for no reason.
And yes, we, and wait a minute. Hold up. Do you want me to go there? Do you want me to talk about the case? Or we will talk about it in the third hour? No, 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 no. See, no, 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 Fred. No, Fred. Don't play that game. Don't play that game, Fred. Hold up. Strong arm robbery. That's what the cops said. Now you have video where
it's on video.
No, no, Fred. Now you got people who are saying, wait a minute. Does the video show that Mike Brown actually paid for it?
What?
Fred.
This old dude was trying to keep him from leaving.
Fred. Oh, hold up, Fred. Hold up, Fred. Hold up, Fred. You want to go there? Let's talk about Chavis Carter, black man in Jonesboro,
oh,
Arkansas. No, 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 Fred. Black man in Jonesboro, Arkansas, who had his hands cuffed behind his back in a police car and ended up shooting himself in the temple, according to the cops. No, Fred. No, Fred. Fred. You can play the
this
game all you
a
want
guy
to.
Who was wrestling
I got
the
you, Fred.
In the police car,
Fred.
And the gun went off.
Hold up. You see, hold up. See, perfect example. You were
saying,
hold on,
is,
stop, Fred. You just said a guy was wrestling the cop in a police car. I'm sorry. Show me the testimony where he was in a police car.
Okay. He was wrestling the police car.
No, hell no, Fred. And, you just said
okay,
he was in the police car. No, Fred.
Well,
you just said he was in the police car. Wrestling the cop.
If I get a word wrong, doesn't change the scenario.
Fred, you didn't get a word wrong. Fred, you got the whole. You got stop, Fred. Hold up, now look. I love this here. I love how Fred.
Shooting.
Fred, I love how you try to link the robbery to the shooting when the police chief hit. Stop, Fred. Hold up, Fred. Really? Because the police chief came out and said Dan Wilson didn't know about the robbery. Dan, you said. Damn, Fred, hold up. Fred, stop.
Michael Brown stayed
no, Fred, you're fronting, Fred, because the police
I'm
chief.
I'm not afraid. I'm looking at the reality.
The police.
Look at the fantasy,
wait a minute.
And then you make decisions.
Oh,
not,
oh wait a minute. Hold up. Now Fred, is judging Mike Brown's state of mind. Okay, I'm done. Folks,
you
give me a call 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. This is News One Now, Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize. And move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Welcome back, News One Now. Number to call, 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. This is News One Now. Roland Martin, glad to be with you again. Give me a call to hear your thoughts, your perspective on what we are talking about here. We're talking about, of course, the issue of what's happening in Ferguson. What's happening in Ferguson. And you have just tremendous unrest going on there. People are trying to figure out what's going on. They're trying to figure out in terms of, you know, how do you move forward? Lots of chaos on the ground, peaceful protests in the daytime. You have chaos at nighttime. It's all crazy. Joining me right now is somebody, folks, you know from the show, Sweetie Pies on OWN, of course, Tim Norman. Of course, they are located there in St. Louis. He is very familiar with Ferguson, with St. Louis area. Tim, welcome to News One Now.
Hey, how you guys doing? Good morning to you.
Doing great. Glad to have you on the show, Tim.
Can you hear me?
So, yeah, I can hear you just fine. Your thoughts, your perspective on what's happening there in Ferguson.
Well, you know, right now, the situation with Mike Brown, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Tim, you're on the air.
Okay. Well, right now what we have, yes, sir, right now what we have is a huge, we have a huge communication problem between generations. What the people and the leaders here are now realizing that they're using the same solutions that they used back in the 60s and 70s for problems. Because back then, when something was wrong, in the community, we marched. We had members of clergy and our politicians. They would come out and speak to us, and that would calm the crowd down. Now, you can't do that with these generations. You can't use the same answers that we used in the 60s for problems that happened in, you know, in this, at this day and age.
But, Tim, here's the problem. Here's
That's
the problem. But Tim, here's the problem.
13-year-olds out.
Tim, here's the problem. Tim, here's the problem. And I hear you on that point. But, Tim, you have people who are saying, well, you know, we need action. A town of 21,000 people, 15,000 people eligible to vote, only 1,500 voted. 67% black. You got 53 cops and a police force, three black folks. You got nearly an all-white city council, nearly all-white school board. Reverend Jackson was on earlier. He said the people of Ferguson have the opportunity to transform the city overnight. So at some point, how do you get this generation to understand that you can't complain about the jury? Because guess what? If you're not registered, you can't serve on a jury.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Mr. Moore. The thing is, you have to realize that all the people that are polling for these positions are of the older generation. Like I said, you have a huge generational gap. The people that are out there doing these things right now in Ferguson, they're not people that are 40 and 50. You have 13 and 14-year-olds out there at 2 in the morning throwing Molotov cocktails.
But here's the question, Tim. If you got 13 and 14-year-old out there, where are their parents?
You know what? I totally agree. I totally agree. Because I've been out there, and that's what you see. You see these kids, and you wonder, where are their parents? I know my mother would not let me out of the house at 2 in the morning when I was 13. You know, no matter how hard I tried, you can't just sneak out that early in the morning.
Well, look, I understand unrest. I understand anger. I understand frustration. But also, I believe you have to channel it. And the problem that I see is you have organized protests in the daytime. You have this craziness at nighttime. You got a handful of people who they're not listening to Antonio French, alderman for St. Louis. They're not listening to Malik Zulu Shabazz. They're not listening to Anthony Shaheed. They're not listening to anybody. And so, as Reverend Jackson said, a small group of people are getting a whole lot of attention. And I just don't see how their actions are somehow advancing an issue.
They absolutely are not. There's no way you can advance the issue by busting windows out, of course. But I think right now, the excuse right now you're hearing on the streets, they're waiting for the arrest. They're waiting for the charges. People say that when the charges come, then they'll go in the house. Because you know when you do something wrong, any person, any walk of life, if you're a criminal, non-criminal, you know if you run a red light, you're going to get a ticket. You know if you rob a store, you're going to go to jail. But they're asking for the same standards for the law enforcement officials.
Well, again, I think that that is certainly the case. I think there's no doubt that the arrest of the police officer, if that happens, his indictment will change things. But I still believe a huge issue that is at play here deals with the fact that it's also a lack of leadership. You have a lack of leadership on the part of city officials who are not doing their job, who are just out here willy-nilly, and it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I think some of the leaders need to start putting younger leaders in a position, because right now the meetings that are being held, the meetings are not being held by people that the children are listening to, the teenagers, the younger generation. They're not going to listen to
the people that are in their 50s.
Okay, but Tim, okay, here's my question, though. But Tim, here's my question.
They have these meetings? But Tim, they're outside.
But here's my question, Tim. Who are the people on the ground listening? Okay, well, who are they listening to then? Who are they? The young folks in Ferguson right now, who are they listening to?
Who they're listening to are people in their own community that the cameras will never pick up, that the preachers will not pass the microphone.
No, Tim. I don't want that. I'm asking you who are they. No, yes, I'm asking you who are they. I want names because I'll put them on the air. If there are young folks who are leading on the ground, I want to know names, and I'll put them on the air. So I'm saying I don't want to speak in generalities. I want to know who they are. Hold tight 1 second. I'm going to a break. 8 minutes before, 8 minutes after the hour. Give me a call, 877-373-9766. This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now.
13 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now with Roland Martin. And we're talking with Tim Norman from Sweetie Pies, of course, there in St. Louis. Tim, before we went to the break, I was talking about this whole issue. Who are these young folks? I mean, again, if there are people out there who are on the ground, who are doing great work, who are talking about leading, my deal is I want names, I want numbers, because I'll be happy to put them on the air because that's with more voices.
You know, Roland, I'll tell you what it is. It's the gang members. It's the gentlemen that are ex-felons that have been in the community and then the kids know these people, because right now, if people don't relate to each other, it's hard for them to listen right now.
Yeah, but here's the deal, though.
You know, Nelly came out there last night.
Yeah, but here's the deal, though. Nelly was out there last night. I get it. But here's the deal. If you got some gang member, I don't know anybody respectable who's going to say, let's roll with a gang member. Now, if they're a former gang member, what's their organization? What's the infrastructure? All I'm saying is, at some point, in order to move a ball forward, there has to be organization. There has to be organization. Otherwise,
absolutely,
it's just the same people out there saying the same stuff with no plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is no central organization. You have a group that's protesting over on this street, another group that's protesting on this side of town. There is no organization. You are absolutely correct. It needs to be centralized.
All right, well, look, Tim, we'll reach back out to you, man. Keep us abreast of what's happening down there. And again, if there are people out there who are on the ground, who are doing some great stuff, who are trying to organize, mobilize, get folks registered, things along those lines, let us know.
Yes, sir.
All right. I appreciate Tim Norman. Tim Norman, folks, from Sweetie Pies on OWN, of course. They are, of course, based in St. Louis, and he's quite familiar with that particular area. Give me a call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Let's go to Cincinnati, Ohio, listening via WDBZ, 1230 The Buzz. Black Lions calling in.
Hey, I wanted to make a few points. Few members of the Black United Front from Cincinnati, Ohio, went down there, and I happened to speak to Sister Iris Rowley, you know, while she's down there, and it's horrible. It's horrible what they're doing. Not the people, not the brothers and sisters, but the powers that be. And I really respect this sister's years of tenure and the work that she's done. But I'm confused with your last conversation. I'm confused with your entire position. But more so
my position. So how are you confused? What's my position?
Well, your position is, irregardless of what's happening, we still gonna be countrymen with the KKK. We can accept them.
What?
We can accept that as countrymen,
and we can exchange the fact that they've been our countrymen for their
actions.
First of all, I never even mentioned the KKK, so therefore, how is that?
Yes, you did. I'm saying by any other name.
No, I didn't.
Because KKK members are now judges, they're cops, they're police chiefs, they're senators, they're governors. Hell, they've been the president. But I'm saying every time you mention these names, yes, you are mentioning the KKK under a different name.
So I'm still trying to hear.
The home of the KKK, am I right?
I'm still trying to understand. So what is my position?
Your position is that irregardless of what they do, you still going to be part of them.
You said irregardless of what they do, I'm going to be a part of them. So you, Black Lion, please explain to me
No,
actually, first, you know, first of all, again, let me go back to this here. You keep saying, so do you somehow think you
like
can divorce. You
funny,
can divorce. You can divorce yourself from the rest of the world. So you saying what? We shouldn't vote,
brother? Why are you deflecting? Did I miss
No, I'm not.
Voting?
I'm not deflecting.
About,
I don't know
I'm
what the hell you talking about.
The land that the KKK.
No, I don't know what the hell you talking about. You're
you
not.
You know those people dealing with the KKK down there, right?
Dude,
that's their problem.
Dude, you are all over the place. You are all over the place. You don't even have a point.
I'm only dealing with the plight in America.
Okay, all right. Okay, you got. Okay, here's the deal. You got about 45 more seconds to make whatever point you're trying to make, which is utterly confusing. Go right ahead.
We could have been done with that if you didn't interject.
I was trying to figure out what you were doing, but I was still clueless. Now you got 40 seconds. Go.
My point is this. Regardless of what the Klan do down there, regardless of what this administration or the home of the KKK or the country of the KKK do, Obama's going to be a part of it. And so are you. So it's futile for you to try to come up with an idea.
So black line not a part of the world. So black line not a part of the same world. Okay.
I'm telling you the KKK isn't the entire world, but they are your rulers in the land you live in.
Okay.
The country, they are your countrymen. They're not everybody's countrymen. They're your countrymen.
Five,
that you accept
four,
and tolerate their behavior
three,
and the behavior
two,
of their children.
One. Okay, your 40 seconds up. Thanks so much.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. You know, I'm telling you, look, if you're going to make a point, try to make one. After all that, I have no idea what the hell Black Lamb's talking about. We in the land of the KKK, you in it, Obama in it. So does Black Lion live in a world that none of us live in? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, what is there a utopia has he created his own little community that is not impacted by anything else in the world? Bro, come on. Come on, man. Seriously, stop. Just stop. But by the way, Black Lion, irregardless, actually, that's not a word. It's not a word. Irrespective is a word. Regardless is a word, but irregardless is not a word. All right, give me a call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. 20 after the hour, this is News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
24 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. 877-373-9766. 877-373-9766. Charles, Washington, D.C., listening via WOL 1450. You're on News One Now with Roland Martin.
Morning, Roland. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. It'd be really interesting if Black Lion and Fred were next door neighbors, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, Fred's in Atlanta, Black Lion's in Cincinnati, but maybe they can move to that utopian world of theirs, so I have no idea.
No doubt. You know, I want to try to be helpful. You know, Roland, this could all have been avoided if the people had simply gotten justice. We can't allow the media to change the narrative. A young man got shot and killed by a cop. He was allowed to lay in the streets like an animal for 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
and the people have got no respect. They've got no justice. We've seen this before. Eric Garner's killer in New York still hasn't been arrested. So what we're seeing in the streets right now, Roland, is massive frustration from the people.
Mm-hmm.
And this notion that a moratorium is a good idea, it's a horrible idea. There will be no peace until there is justice. And, you know, you had asked a question earlier, you know, who are the young people going to listen to? They're not going to listen to, and this is no disrespect intended to Reverend Jackson or any other, quote-unquote, civil rights leader. They're not going to listen to people who drop into their communities when they catch hell every single day. You know, the numbers speak for themselves. And late next month, we're all going to have a good time at CBC. You know, we may party a little bit. You know, but, you know, parties and celebrations are reserved for victory. They're not reserved for failure. You know, and I hope members of the CBC are listening right now. I hope that they see the the merit in the idea of training people around the country to run for office and training people how to become productive. Reverend Jackson said, and I agree with him, we do need to, you know, to vote, but we need to vote our interests. We need to vote in a direction that's going to impact positive change within our communities. We can't vote to be beholden to, you know, a particular party. You know, the people of Ferguson can use this very sour situation, Roland, and turn it into something sweet. They should keep protesting 24 hours a day, okay, number one. Number two, there should be economic boycotts going on all over America. You know, yes, we are very entrenched to the national economy, but, you know, we have so much money, and we should have the mental discipline to redirect our dollars, because what we are being shown right now is that, and we've been showing this since we've been in America, is that we're not loved in this country. And I think there's something more going on with this story, Roland, when you have the president who's had to take a break from his so-called vacation to come and address this story. I mean, this thing, it reeks, you know. So we can't let the media deflect. We got to stand with the liberators and say, keep going on, keep pushing. And I find it very interesting, Roland, that the rappers are silent on this. How can you be the voice of a young generation and see young people get killed, yet and still you're silent on a situation like this? I don't know. I mean, do you think it's appropriate for people to be calling for calm when we're getting killed and we're not getting justice, Roland?
Yes, I do. I believe it is appropriate to call for calm.
Okay.
Because here's the deal. When you have folks who are out there who are protesting, and they're throwing rocks and they're throwing bottles, that is not helping anything at all.
And I agree with that. But let me say this, Roland. I know for a fact, okay, because I've studied history, that the government will plant agitators. The government will plant people to stir up a ruckus. You know, they're called agent provocateurs.
But here's the deal. But here's the deal, though. And that,
yes,
where, and what that means is, as I said when Reverend Jackson was on the phone,
yes,
that
sir,
means that you need to have 100 or 200 people who, mm-hmm, go out there, who surround them and say, y'all are not going to sit here and do this crap.
Yes,
y'all,
sir,
are not going to sit here, act the damn fool, and embarrass our community by doing this. And what you also do, you go out there and you look somebody in the eye and you say, you from here? Where your mama? Where your daddy? And we go and get them to say, yo, come control your doggone kid.
Yes,
see,
sir,
that's what I'm saying. So, see, I'm not just falling for, well, they outside influencers. No, if they are outside influencers, bust them out. Call them out. But that's why you got to have a show of force of people of goodwill to say, no, these fools are not going to be the ones who determine how the rest of the world sees us.
I agree with you, Roland, but don't you agree also that we need the rabble-rousers, we need the intellectual class, we need the capitalist class, we need the spiritual class. We all need to be unified right now.
No, but here's the deal, though, dog. You're not going to get somebody who's going to be unified with a cat out there throwing rocks in bottles. It's
well,
not going
to
happen.
My assertion to you is that it's not us who's doing that. My suggestion to you is that it's the agent provocateurs who are hired by the government who are out there throwing rocks and bottles and Molotov cocktails
But here's the deal, though.
We're exercising our constitutional rights.
Sorry. Here's the deal, though. I'm not. You're saying that, but what? So which government hired them? The Attorney General?
I wouldn't put it past the federal government. I would not put it past the state government.
Bro, come on.
I mean,
come on, bro. Come on.
Members of your media class were slapped around and were arrested. I mean, what's your thought about that? You don't think they're above that?
And they shouldn't have.
Okay, but see, that's what I'm just saying. That same mindset that will slap around and arrest the media class is the same mindset that will put people in there.
Okay, but okay, hold up. But I'm done. You throwing out the conspiracy theory.
It's not
I wouldn't put it
theory,
past the federal government. I would put Bottom line is this here. If you had 100 people surround them and say, y'all ain't going to play that game, Doc, that's it. They can shut it down. And what I'm saying is you got to have grown leadership at night just like you have in the daytime. I got to I'm done. I'm done. You got to have grown people out there at night, not a bunch of 13, 14-year-olds walking around. I'm calling for grown people to be there at night. I got to go to a break. Folks, it is 28 before the top of the hour. This is News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin.
Roland Martin here, News 1 Now. Certainly glad to be with you. He, of course, one of the great party men of all time. Many folks, of course, know about the great Chuck Brown. But guess what? There's a new tribute CD to him, and it is called Beautiful Life. Chuck Brown, the Chuck Brown Band, and we're talking about that right here on News 1 Now. We want to welcome our guests into the studio. Look at our clean. President, look, we talked about this last time, okay? Now, we on TV show, you come here, man, you got this. Wear your jacket. Where you supposed to be suited and booted?
Yeah, I got to be comfortable.
I mean, you go on the stage, you got tuxedo on.
I'll get Funny Man Skiba on you, man.
Please.
You know that's my sidekick.
Please. You going to bring Mr. Potato Head out here? No, you didn't. In your defense, that is not somebody you should be bringing out here, Raheem Devon, in your defense.
His name's not good around here.
You should not be bringing him around here because, because he acted a fool last time he was here. And so, you know, we got to go ahead and check him as best as we can. And so y'all just follow his lead. Y'all was like, all right.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't want to upstage you, man.
Yeah, man, we want to let you be suited and booted.
Y'all actually trying to follow him on that one. Don't even try to follow him on that one.
I'll be ready for you on Thursday, though.
Right, but he's going to have a kilt next time he's here. Yeah. Go have a kilt. All right, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Raheem Devon.
Hi, I'm Chucky Thompson.
Hey, I'm Frank.
You look like you weren't so sure about this. Kind of like,
He got different names, man.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm Frank Sears.
Oh, you got it was Frank. What he got? His Vegas name or something like that?
Yeah, we call him different name when we out in Vegas.
So let's talk. Let's talk about this CD here, Beautiful Life, dedicated to Chuck Brown.
Well, it's a project, man, celebrating a beautiful life. You know what I mean? Chuck Brown was meant so much to the city. You know what I mean? And so much to the music that we call Go-Go. I think it's fitting, man. It's bittersweet, you know, that you're able to say Chuck Brown's last album, you know what I mean? So, in saying that, though, you know, it's a good thing that we had music, you know, that we were able to put out, and music that we was able to record after his passing, so.
Yeah, and the unique thing about it is, you know, it's a compilation of a lot of the inner city artists. Like, we all came together to create this album. And, you know, it's a collective effort, but it came out, like, it really came out nice. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's out now, so, you know, go out and purchase it.
Now, did you have to tell some people, like, look, we got enough room. Because a lot of times, folks want to get on things. I was talking to Lionel Richie when he did his country album, Tuskegee. And, man, all these country artists came from left and right. He said, we might have to do Tuskegee 1, 2, and 3. Some of the people who wanted to be a part of it.
Well, Roland, I know a producer from the area, you know, James McKinney, kind of spearheaded the project in terms of, vocals and whatnot that were recorded by Chuck. Yeah. You know, prior to passing. So, you know, I think the album was put together organically, you know, just like previous, you know, albums, you know, the album that Chucky produced prior to this one as well was put together organically where you just knew who needed to be part of the project. So, you know, for example, Beautiful Life, Wale's on the album, myself, Frank is on the album, Ayanna Crawley, a lot of wonderful, you know, guests and art and dope artists, even from the Go-Go community, you know, Sugar Bear from EU, KK, Chuck's daughter. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's when you have family or you get those calls, I remember getting a call to be part of this project. Faith Evans is also on the album. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certain people call you and like
Dougie Fresh intro.
Yeah, yeah, Dougie's on the album. So certain people call you and you just say, all right, when you need me to be here? They said, come to Roland, you know, Roland needs you to be here. I said, guess what? I'm not going to upstage Roland today.
Oh, look
I'm
at
I'm going to fall back. I'm not going to pull out my three-piece suit and my gaiters.
Look, oh, so you
and I'm not going to bring, and
Chuck,
I'm not gonna bring funny
he,
man
he,
Steve
he,
up in here.
He'd be suited and booted.
Yeah, I got gaiters.
I got ascots. I got whatever you
oh,
need.
Oh, look at them. You got kilts?
Yeah, I got kilts. All that.
Kilts, man.
And I got funny man Skiba. Come on up. No, I'm just kidding.
Boy, please. Don't even try. Don't even try that. So when you talk about, obviously, the folks on here, what do you believe that his music means beyond D.C.? Because I think a lot of times, and again, as somebody, I've been in D.C. 4 years, a lot of times folks want to say, well, he's ours without realizing that, well, the music actually goes beyond the borders of D.C., Maryland, Virginia.
You know, let me ask, just from traveling the world and knowing that, you know, they have a go-go night in Japan, you know, the fact that, you know, Frank was just with the Chuck Brown Band in Atlanta, you know, doing a big festival out there. You know, I know Chucky is a testament to that as a producer, you know, the countless records that have been sampled, you know.
Not to cut you off, but the crazy thing about Chuck is...
Actually, he's trying to cut you off.
I didn't mean to. But then again, I did. But the thing about Chuck, a lot of people don't realize, is that his record actually was one of the first records that started, you know, hip-hop. You know, when you think about breaks and beats, you know, Bustin' Loose is one of the most popular breaks, you know, in history. And then you're talking about Dougie Fresh picking up on, you know, his vibe and his groove. This whole, they call it the 495 pocket, you know. So that pocket is what makes the city, you know, Chuck Brown just created a groove that, you know, it has wound up being the sound of the city, but it's also the sound of just that pocket, period. You know, so he's the creator of that pocket. Anybody that knows the sound that goes on down here, you know, it was created from Chuck.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that I mean, just speaking from a go-go perspective, you know, being a go-go musician myself, you know, we got a chance to go to India coming up. You know, like you said, Chuck's been in Japan, Germany, Switzerland, all over the country, you know, jazz cruises in the Caribbean. So I think for people outside of the city, you know, it gives us a chance to let them know where we come from, what we do. And, you know, with Chuck spearheading that whole thing, you know, it means so much to us as go-go musicians to be able to create that platform.
Hold tight 1 second. I'm going to break 16 before the top of the hour. Folks, you're listening to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
11 before the top of the hour. Welcome back, News One Now, folks. We're talking about a new CD out. It is called Beautiful Life, Chuck Brown and the Chuck Brown Band. And so here's my question. Your favorite Chuck Brown song?
Bustin' Loose. Easy. I grew up on Bustin' Loose, so.
That's it. That's all you played all day.
Yeah.
All day.
Well, my parents played it all day.
Ah, gotcha. Gotcha.
It would be Run Joe is one of my favorites.
Run
songs.
Joe?
Yeah.
All right, Run Joe.
I had to go with Bustin' Loose and Beautiful Life, believe it or not, which is the new single featuring Wale. Like, I remember hearing that record, you know, working on the record that I was working on for the album, and James McKinney playing that record for me.
Yeah, James got out.
And it just has a.
It's a vibe.
It's a very organic vibe. It's very just timeless, and it just feels. It just has a very. It's a mystique to it.
What a CD, Chuck Brown love songs. Slow stuff. Slow stuff.
Well, he did. What's the break? The one at the end. It's on the back of it.
You'll never find.
That ain't really slow. I'm talking about a ballad.
Yeah.
That starts off slow.
Chuck's style was never like, you know, he.
But I think he could have been a cold ballad.
Yeah.
He could have definitely pulled it off, but he loved to get people out of them suits.
Yeah, he liked
to
party,
on the floor and get it hot and get crazy,
bro. Yeah, out of the suits.
Oh, you going to bring that back up?
I mean, I'm just.
You going to bring that back up?
You're going to bring that back up. Man, don't start.
Don't start.
You got an extra tie in the back?
Quite like
extra tie in the back.
And pocket square, too.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. For those who are struggling, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Those who come here with T-shirts on?
No. Well, you can't do that T-shirt stuff. Can't do it.
I never seen Pops in, well, I have seen Pops in a T-shirt on a Go-Go Live, but lately, you know, later on in his life, I never seen him in a T-shirt, so maybe I should start wearing some college shirts.
Grown people get dressed up.
You're right. You got a college shirt on the CD, man. Beautiful.
That's right. Grown people get dressed up. Now, what your daddy said, let me walk out that house wearing doggone T-shirt. Man, put on some grown people clothes.
Yeah.
So who would you have wanted to be on this CD? If you had your pick of somebody you would want to do a Chuck Brown collaboration, who would it be?
I mean, as far as the musical landscape in D.C., I mean, royalty is already on it. Oh, you know what I mean?
Anybody in the world, man.
Anybody in the world?
I'm trying to expand this. Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson. Prince.
Okay, Michael's dead. I'm talking about
It was talks about Snoop being a part of this album.
Really?
Yeah. You know, Snoop and Chuck had a relationship, and we were kind of talking over some things, you know.
Y'all couldn't buy enough weed to get him into the studio? This guy right, I mean, you got to have a stack. I mean, let's just be clear.
Oh, I think he has his own stack, yeah. So, you know.
He got a busload, precisely.
He's covered in that.
That's right. He's happy about Colorado and Washington State. He's happy.
But, you know, he understood what was happening here. He knew about Chuck and knew about what we were doing here, so.
I probably would have said Stevie Wonder. That would have been interesting.
That would have been dope, yeah.
Yeah, Stevie.
Because Stevie don't stop either. Just like Chuck wouldn't stop playing music, Stevie don't stop.
Nah.
Stevie just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And that's just talking. I ain't talking about playing music.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about there. So okay, Dougie first does the intro. So is he beatboxing or is he talking? What is he doing?
He's like talking and doing a little bit of beatboxing, right?
Well, not really beatboxing. He did some beatboxing. Just to show that when he comes here, he's always going to, you know, honor Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime he comes in this area, he's going to honor Chuck.
And he talked about also how when the first time he heard Chuck, and how Run DMC introduced him to it. So it was that was kind of touching story listening to that.
But see, I think what's important is that the concept of having a band. There's still something about live instruments.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That makes a party different. So whether or not you're listening to when you think about Earth, Wind & Fire, we think about Mint Condition. When you think about, I mean, bands. I mean, I love listening to Rebirth Brass Band, Hot 8 as well, because it's just a whole different feel as opposed to it all being electronic.
But see, that was Chuck's whole thing. Even when it was the beginning, when you were talking about hiring a DJ or hiring a band, you know, the DJs came out with the crossfader. And then Chuck, that's when he created that whole putting a pocket or putting a breakdown in between the songs. You know, most bands would play a song and stop. So that was his whole thing, was, you know, to keep it going, to do a first set and do a second set. So, you know, he always kept that live thing going just because of what you just said. It's the feeling with that.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Hi, Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, another night of chaos in Ferguson. 31 folks arrested, and there's no end in sight to the standoff. President Barack Obama gave another speech yesterday on what's happening in Ferguson. He also said Attorney General Eric Holder will be headed to Missouri. And also, Mike Brown's family releases their own autopsy. We will talk with the nation's first black female medical examiner about it. And also, what's up with St. Louis County? For some reason, they have not released their autopsy, but they sure are leaking toxicology reports when it comes to Mike Brown and marijuana. Our panel will certainly weigh in on that. All that and more coming up right now on News One Now. $10 Tense night in Ferguson, Missouri, where police stepped up pressure against protesters there. 31 people were arrested. Tear gas fired into the crowd again. Folks are trying to figure out what is going on. There is no end in sight to what's going on there in Missouri. Last night, also, they had lifted their curfew. Yeah, it's interesting. On the one night they lift the curfew, there are more arrests than any other night. What exactly can be done? Will any of this cease? Can you have peaceful protest? So we will deal with all of those issues today right here on News One Now. It is certainly a rough going there. Here we are in day nine after Mike Brown was shot and killed by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson. And we still don't have a police report from that day. We still don't have that officer charged or arrested. We still don't have an autopsy report from St. Louis County. We have numerous stories coming from Ferguson police, and people on the ground are saying there are far too many questions. They don't trust any officials there. But the other issue is, where in the hell is the leadership in Ferguson? When is the last time you've seen the mayor, the city council, the city manager? Who exactly is in charge there in Ferguson? Missouri Governor Jay Nixon, he is trying to show some leadership, but when has he been to ground zero to also deal with the issue there? Lots of questions we want to address. We have a great panel lined up right here. We have attorney Michael Higginbotham. We have Law and Victoria Burke, Politic365.com. We have MSNBC analyst Michael Steele, former chair of the Republican National Committee as well. But first up, we're going to go to retired Lieutenant General Russell Honoré. Many of you knew him, of course, from Hurricane Katrina, leading the National Guard there. He joins us via Skype. General Honoré, 200 National Guard troops are in Ferguson, Missouri. They're there, though, to protect the police command center as opposed to dealing with the crowd. Your assessment of what's happening on the ground, does any of this make sense in terms of how police are operating there in Ferguson, Missouri?
No, Roland, because they're trying to apply the tactics of overwhelming police to solve a political and a justice issue. The government, you can bring 1,000 more police in there and it won't solve the issue at this point in time. The narrative of the people, which I think has been pretty clear over the last 3 or 4 days, is one to call for justice, fairness, and address the aggressiveness of police officers. And the way they express that is through civil disobedience. So the response from the government has been to put more police, be more aggressive, and to use more equipment and like stunt rounds and like the tear gas. So the very reason the people are being disobedient is the solution they're bringing. We need a political narrative, Roland, to solve this. Bringing in more National Guard won't solve it. Bringing in more federal agents won't solve it.
So General Honoré, when you talk about that political leadership, what you're saying is, sure, you have police, but you've got to have a mayor, a city manager, county officials step up there. You even had yesterday, General Honoré, where the police, for some reason, were telling people they couldn't even stop somewhere. They had to keep walking, keep moving. And I'm going, does the First Amendment still exist in Ferguson, Missouri?
Well, again, the people are practicing civil disobedience. So when you practice civil disobedience, you learn, or somebody teach you, that you pick the simple laws and you break them. It doesn't mean you're going to break the front of a store. Oh, I can't stand here? Well, I'll go to jail for not standing here. Let me see how stupid that looks. And that is what's happening. That's the narrative of how weird this democracy is being played out on the ground, that they need to step back. They need a new narrative, a political narrative, not a police, again, using more aggressive behavior, telling people, making up rules like they go, you got to walk, you can't stand, you can't be here, you got to be there, you can't be in the streets, you got to be on. This is out of control. And I admire the efforts of the captain on the ground to try to get this under control. But we've got to get a politician out there that's going to be responsible, the mayor or the governor, or somebody appointed, or the federal government's gonna have to step in and take this case over and let kids go back to school, because this is not playing out right.
Michael Steele, the general talks about, you don't have political leadership. Yeah, you're not seeing it.
No, you don't. I mean, I think you asked the appropriate question. Where's the mayor? I couldn't even tell you who the mayor of the town is. I couldn't tell you who the leadership is because their voices, their presence has not been felt. Everybody's looking to Washington to solve this because of the vacuum that's been created.
Local, county, and state.
The governor, as it was tweeted the other night, looks like he was counting to 100 in his head, just hoping the whole thing would just go away. you know, then you have the police just sitting there. The captain on the ground is going contra everything that everyone wants to be done. There's no organization, there's no direct plan. So the citizens rightly get frustrated because they're being told, as was noted, don't stand here, keep moving there. And they're like, all we want to do is express our frustration and have an answer to simple questions. And the question that still remains is, where's the political leadership to do that? I don't see it anytime soon, to be honest with you.
Well, it's been a rough week, and certainly, you know, some perspective is needed. What I think, and I agree with the general, I think clearly some political leadership is needed here. It's certainly not coming from local authorities, so it needs to come from somewhere else. Nationally, I think, is real important. And it is really critical for folks to understand this is not just about Ferguson. This is not just about Michael Brown. This is about a problem that's been going on nationally and for a long time.
Lauren?
The city's going to go bankrupt on lawsuits is what's going to happen with Ferguson because half of what they're doing is just patently illegal. If you watch the live feeds of this, when the general honore says they make up rules, they totally make up rules moment to moment. And the reason they had arrests last night was because they made up a rule and started arresting people for no reason, that they couldn't stand in a parking lot. Now all of a sudden that's illegal.
Right.
Ferguson.
General Honore, I got about 15 seconds. What I don't understand is you have a curfew, you get rid of the curfew, but you have more rest on one night after you got rid of the curfew. I mean, it's illogical.
Hey, Roland, the only thing going to fix this, you got to figure out what rules you're going to break. We're trying to follow the rules as laid out in the Constitution and law and what, you know, everything a lawyer tells you about presidents. They got to figure out what rule. The rules are not working. The rules were meant for normal time. So this long, drawn-out process of coming to conclusion, you got to break that. You got to stop looking at a calendar and start looking at a watch, baby.
All right. Retired Lieutenant General Russell Honore. Man, I'm sure I wish we had you there in Missouri, but you are retired. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Folks, coming up, President Barack Obama is sending Attorney General Eric Holder to Ferguson on tomorrow to meet with fellow investigators. Also, autopsy report done by the family shows that Mike Brown was shot 6 times. We will talk next with the first black female medical examiner in the United States about that particular report as well. And also, Darren Wilson. No, this is not the Darren Wilson who shot and killed Mike Brown. This is a brother who's there in St. Louis, but he's gotten lots of Darren Wilson's phone calls. We'll talk to him next on News One Now as well with our continuing coverage of the unrest in Ferguson right here on TV.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, a big issue in Ferguson, Missouri is that is the autopsy of Michael Brown. St. Louis County, they have refused to release the autopsy even though it has been 9 days. That makes no sense whatsoever because typically by this time you would actually have an autopsy report. So the family, they actually conducted their own led by Dr. Michael Botten. They had a news conference on yesterday where they revealed the actual, unfortunately, the 6 shots fired into Mike Brown's body. Here is Sean Parcells. Professor Sean Parcells. He assisted Dr. Michael Botten in conducting this autopsy.
He was shot at least 6 times. We've got one to the very top of the head, the apex. We've got one that entered just above the right eyebrow. We've got one that entered the top part of the right arm. We've got a graze wound, a superficial graze wound to the middle part of the right arm. We've got a wound that entered the medial aspect of the right arm. And we've got a deep graze wound that produced a laceration to the palm of the right hand. So it also could have occurred when he was putting his hands up. So I put my hands up and you see where that wound is at. It could have happened if he put his arms across in a defensive manner. We don't know. And we still have to look at other aspects of this investigation before we can really start piecing things together.
Folks, joining me right now is Joy Carter. She is the first African-American ever appointed chief medical examiner in the United States. She's a Howard University graduate, and she was chief medical examiner in the District of Columbia, also Houston, Texas, as well as Indianapolis, Indiana. And we're still joined with our panel here. We have the professor at University of Baltimore School of Law, also political analyst, Professor Michael Higginbotham, author of the book Ghosts of Jim Crow, Lauren Victoria Burke, managing editor of Politics365.com, and Michael Steele, former chair of the Republican National Committee, as well as an MSNBC analyst. Dr. Carter, I want to go to you. So you listened to the news conference. You also saw the New York Times report on the autopsy done on Mike Brown. Before I get to that, though, as a chief medical examiner in three different cities, is it offensive to you, or is it standard operating procedure for us to go 9 days and for St. Louis County to conduct an autopsy but not release it to the public?
It's actually standard procedure. Generally, it's 4 to 6 weeks to have a complete autopsy done. But when you have a case like this, there's a possibility of releasing some information through a press release when you have to calm people who have lots of questions.
But here's the issue here, okay, because I've covered, I've dealt with murders before. Typically, I've seen them release an autopsy report, and then they say toxicology reports would take 4 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 weeks, and then they release that then. They haven't done so, yet yesterday, the family, they have their news conference. Then the St. Louis County Medical Examiner comes out and says, oh yeah, he was shot several times, and then they have folks leaking information saying, oh, we found marijuana in his system.
That could have been done a completely different way. If they had joined forces, a joint press conference, it certainly would have come across better to the public. They missed an opportunity to be open and honest and appear to be impartial.
But doesn't that also feed into this notion of distrust among officials there in Ferguson and St. Louis County? When you have the police chief who releases this video about a so-called robbery or theft or shoplifting, however you want to call it. But earlier he said that he wasn't involved in criminal activity. Then he said the officer, he did not know Mike Brown had supposedly committed a robbery. Then he said, well, he saw this. And then, of course, now you have the medical examiner. I mean, the people on the ground are saying, we can't trust any official who was involved in this case to give us a straight answer.
That is very inconsistent, and it does play into, no, we cannot trust this system. They could have done this a better way, and to have this piecemeal information come out after the second autopsy doesn't make the government look good. That's why there's a need to have the federal government step in and try to perform now a neutral investigation and make sure that all the evidence is handled properly.
Dr. Carter, couldn't they release a preliminary report of some type that isn't the full report, but just some information to the public?
That would have been advisable to do at that time, knowing the unrest and the situation. To do it now, piecemeal, afterwards, just doesn't look good.
Doctor, this is Michael Steele. What is your expectation of the federal autopsy that's being conducted out of the Department of Justice? How do you think all of that will stack up ultimately? Will it put more pressure on the county to accelerate their process, or how do you see that playing out as well?
That's one of my old units, the Armed Forces Medical Examiner System, that comes in for the federal government to perform a postmortem examination. It will take this out of the hands of the local government, and it will put pressure on to make sure that the evidence collected already is handled properly. They will have to rely on the initial autopsy because there's nothing better than the initial presentation and the photographs, and as well as the second autopsy. So now you have three groups looking into this. And that will, I think, keep the local government on its toes. We're looking. Everything should have been handled properly. And it has to be now accountability for how you're handling this evidence, the photographs, the clothing, the scene, the officer's vehicle, the officer's uniform, all of that, hopefully, was handled appropriately at that time.
Dr. Carter, of the presentation by Dr. Botten yesterday, does anything stand out to you? Anything stand out as related to the death of Mike Brown?
Well, what stood out was the fact that he did not show any entrance gunshot wounds to the back of Mr. Brown's body. He still was left with questions as to how many wounds, and of course, we cannot say right now what position he was in. It's very difficult to say that, but he did the right thing. He did say what he did not have access to. That would be witness statements, that would be x-rays showing where the bullets were, that would be the clothing, and certainly the scene investigation. But he did later rest that Mr. Brown was not shot multiple times in his back. And he was shot multiple times in his front. So we do have to rely on circumstances and particularly witness statements, because there's always, in a forensic investigation, three sides to every story.
All right. Dr. Joy Carter, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And look forward to having you back as we go forward when it comes to this case.
Thank you.
Folks, coming up after days of unrest, what's the latest on the ground? We talked to two reporters who've been on the front lines there in Ferguson. Also, a local St. Louis police officer whose name is Darren Wilson talks about the issue of race in this matter. And his perspective is quite interesting, because considering he's been getting lots of phone calls and people have mistaken him as a person who shot and killed Mike Brown. So we'll talk to him up next as well. Folks, we continue with our continuing coverage of the unrest in Ferguson right here on News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Well, it's a tale of two Darren Wilsons. One, the police officer, Ferguson police officer, who shot and killed Mike Brown 9 days ago. But also there's a Darren Wilson, who's a sergeant with the St. Louis Police Department and also president of the Ethical Society of Police. He has gotten lots of phone calls. He has had his picture plastered all over social media as the Darren who actually shot and killed Mike Brown, but that is not him. He joins us right now via Skype. And so, Darren, your life has certainly been upended the last 9 days there in Missouri.
Yes, it has been quite an experience. And thank you and good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Darren, as a police officer from that area, give us your perspective on how you assess what is happening there. Is it too much police force? Did police there screw it up from the beginning, and it's just simply gotten worse every misstep since then?
Well, this is very timely, actually, in this sense, because for years, especially the last 2 years, this is something my organization, the Ethical Society of Police, has been discussing with our police administration and our city government. Number one, the first thing and most pressing issue is diversity within the police department. It's just not there. You can look at Ferguson, 53 officers, out of that, three of them black. Something's wrong with that. That's a trend that we're seeing across the country. I recently attended the National Black Police Association conference in Los Angeles, California, which entailed police officers from around the world. And you know what the common sentiment was amongst us all? Guess what? We learned it was diversity in all of the departments. So you're asking if that would have had an effect on anything? Our belief is absolutely. And I listened to some of the commentary prior to me joining you. Hey, you're right on target. You have to get in and interact with, engage the community, let them know, hey, this is a team, a partnership. And in Ferguson, it appears as if that was not the case. You can't talk down to people. You can't treat it as an us against them approach. It has to be a collective, collaborative effort. Had we had that, had the response following the incident been more interactive, more transparent, maybe we would have had a different outcome. Maybe we wouldn't be experiencing what we're experiencing today. Where do we go from here? That's the question of the climate right now.
I'm glad. And then, Darren, you've raised that point. Where do we go from here? I was talking about this with our panel during the break, and this is what is bothering me. I get protest. But also, I believe, where's your plan of action? And what I'm waiting to hear, I'm waiting to see individuals who are on the ground who are saying, okay, these are the next steps. So when Darren says, look, you got to diversify the police force, okay, somebody has to be saying, all right, I get the short-term issue. We want him arrested. We want the investigation. We want the grand jury. But you've got to also have folks who are working on that as well to say we're moving towards that. Otherwise, no plan of action. You're just out there just protesting.
Right. That's so right. important, Roland.
Well, in
so,
Darren, hold tight 1 second. Michael, go ahead.
It's so important to hear one from local black police officers there because they know the problems, and you identify a twofold approach. One is to deal with the problems in Ferguson. The other is to deal with the problem nationally, because this is not just a local issue. This is a national problem. So we need to, one, recognize we got a problem. Two, we need to empower the communities. I mean, you look at Ferguson, unemployment 50% for blacks under 40. We need to empower the community with an American Jobs Act. Identify these places. And then three, inclusivity. We need to have our government entities reflect who we are. And that's what the gentleman mentioned,
Darren,
in terms of diversity.
Darren, what do you think the answer is with the diversity question on the department? Is it lack of applications? Is it people not applying? You know, is it people applying and not being accepted? What do you think it is?
Sure, we get that all the time. And that's the number one, what we call it, cop-out. Hey, we can't find the qualified African Americans. Right. Well, that's not true. My organization, we mentor. We do pre-employment workshops for African Americans. They're there. Why they're not getting hired? Hey, that's the question that we're not getting answered. So with that being said, that's why it's important now that since we have the national attention, we have the president's attention, the Department of Justice attention, also Attorney General Eric Holder's attention, we're teaming together, us here in St. Louis, the NAACP, the National Black Police Association, and we are charging the president's office. We're demanding the Department of Justice to step in, force the city leaders, the local governments and police administration, the police managers, to look at this problem of diversity in their departments across the country and effectuate some change. That's what's necessary at this point, because this conversation has been occurring across the country with all of the police managers, all of the city governments, the state governments, we'd have them. So at this time is now. And when you're talking about the protest, it's important, protesters, to maintain your position, get the attention, and do not lax up. Now, we're not advocating rioting at all. That's nonsense. But the protesters, we're learning that it does work. It's getting their attention. And we can't ease up until they see the importance. When I say they, I'm talking about the national leaders, importance of building these police departments, staffing them.
Right.
The diversity that will reflect the communities that they serve. That's what's necessary now. But the applicants are there. Why they're not getting hired, hey, there's so many different variables and so many excuses that we continue to get. Everything from education, everything from background checks. There's so many subtleties in so many different ways around that issue where blacks are being disqualified from the jobs.
Mike, I got 25 seconds here when we talk about next step. This is what city leaders, the mayor should be saying,
right.
We want the federal government, just like Mitch Landrieu did in New Orleans,
right.
to come in and to assess our police department and the relationships they have with this community.
Absolutely. They have the capacity to do that. They have the tools. They have the boots on the ground that they could put in place that'll help make that transition from where Ferguson is right now to where it needs to be. I think Officer Wilson is exactly right on that point. And the partnership between the local police with the national effort will also hopefully pull that leadership out of the community
right.
as well.
Officer Darren Wilson, we surely appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man. And keep going, and good luck with what you're doing there in the St. Louis area.
Thank you all. See you shortly.
Thanks a bunch, folks. Michael Brown is the only brother who has been gunned down by police. We give you an update on some other cases that have taken place over the last several months and also in the last couple of weeks. Also, we'll talk with activist Jasmine Koenig. She has been on the streets of L.A. protesting in the killing of Ezell Ford, a 25-year-old young man who was shot and killed by police. Two officers who can't explain he was unarmed and why he's dead. 16 before the top of the hour. This is News 1 Now on TV One.
So you want the truth? Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Travis Carter, Jonesboro, Arkansas, July 28th, 2012. He was handcuffed in a police car, hands behind his back. Somehow the cops say he shot himself in the head. Jonathan Farrell, Charlotte, North Carolina, took place September 2013. Young man, former Florida A&M football player, was in a serious car accident, knocking on doors to get some help. When the police arrived, they thought he was a suspect. He was shot 10
times. The officer in that case, though, he was actually indicted, not by the first grand jury, by the second grand jury. He's waiting to go on trial. He was indicted in January. John Crawford III, Dayton, Ohio, August 5th. Same thing. Here he is in a Walmart with an air gun. Someone calls the cops. Cops show up. They fire a shot into his chest. He is killed. Protesters there want those police tapes, want the tapes from Walmart released to show what happened. And of course, Ezell Ford, shot and killed by two veteran LAPD police officers on August 11th. There have been massive protests in Los Angeles for Ezell Ford. Joining me right now is activist Jasmine Koenig via Skype from Los Angeles. And also from St. Louis, we have breaking news reporter Yamiche Alcindor with USA Today. I want to go to you first, Jasmine. You had the protests there taking place in Los Angeles. It's not just about what's happening in Ferguson with Michael Brown. Ezell Ford there. We got a litany of other cases. We still have the Kendrick Johnson case, the mysterious death of Kendrick Johnson there in Georgia as well. And so this issue, when it comes, now that didn't involve police, but there are suspicion that police were actually blocking that investigation. You have real issues around the country of black men and police departments where they're not meshing at all and black men are ending up dead.
Well, you know, here in Los Angeles, we're no stranger to that. And you're right. Over the weekend here in Los Angeles, a lot of people, all of all different races, came together to protest the killing of Ezell Ford. I was down there observing. I also went to, you know, where the site where it happened at. I think what the issue is for the rest of America, because Roland, this is nothing new to me and you, I think for the rest of America, it's like an awakening. Like, this is still happening in 2014. Do you mean to tell me that, you know, African American males are being profiled? It never stopped. You know, and for Los Angeles, you know, we're watching Ferguson. We've been through our own situation, as you know, in 1992 and in 1965 here in Los Angeles. And we continue to still have these issues. I mean, yesterday we did a show here in LA with the police president union, the union of the police president.
Right.
I'm sorry. And he, you know, he had to do his role, right? He defended the officers. He said, let's wait to see what the investigation finds out. And then you have civil rights leaders here in Los Angeles who want a fast track investigation. I'm kind of in the middle on that. When you rush things, you make mistakes, right? And so I think what the people want here in Los Angeles is for Ezell Ford's death, that investigation to be a priority for the LAPD. But what they don't want is for it to be fast-tracked and have a lot of mistakes in the end and not come to the right conclusions or the right findings.
Yes, man, I want to go to you. You're there in Ferguson. You've had to deal with the tear gas, things along those lines. I talked about these other shootings taking place. Yamiche, I'm sorry, and we're putting the attention on those stories as well. Are you hearing folks on the ground there link Mike Brown and the other cases taking place around the country?
Definitely. People here are definitely linking Mike Brown to Eric Garner, to Emmett Till, to so many other people, Oscar Grant. People here I've seen a lot of posters with people with Michael's picture on the same poster board as Jordan Davis and Trayvon Martin. So I think people here are definitely seeing Michael Brown's case as a symbol of something that's way greater than just this one case. And I think people are definitely connecting the dots here in St. Louis. And I think people are also connecting the dots to their own lives. Like, I know we talked about, we named people that we all know that were famous, but there are also people that are linking themselves to Michael Brown and saying that he's the face of St. Louis youth, but so many of us have dealt with this before.
I want to go to Michael Steele here. I talk about these stories and linking them, and I think it's important for people to understand Mike Brown, Ezell Ford, mm-hmm. Chavis, Eric Garner. All of a sudden, when you begin to look at it that way, it causes you to begin to say, wait a minute, these are not just isolated incidents, John Crawford as well, where you have this relationship between police officers and black men. Let's be honest, you ain't seeing white guys get gunned down the same way.
Right, and I think that was, interestingly, one of the points that Rand Paul made in his New York Times piece, that, you know, as a young man, if he were to mouth off to the police, he didn't have an expectation of being shot. And so the reality is still out there for a lot of young African-American men, that their relationship with the police is very different from the rest of the country. They are profiled. They are stereotyped. They are put in a particular caste, and they are responded to in a way that we don't see officials respond to other communities. And it, for me at least, it speaks to an ongoing systemic issue that we still haven't addressed in this country, and that is the relationship that still remains between black folks and white folks. All this other stuff on immigration, all that stuff, y'all can have that conversation all day long. None of that really resolves itself until the black-white issue in this country resolves itself, because that is the root of everything else.
Jasmine, 20 seconds, final comment.
Look, I just want to say this. Overseas in Egypt, when folks rebelled against their government, folks called it an Arab Spring. And when African Americans do the same thing in America, we're seen as rioters, as looters, as this and as that. So we need to put this all into perspective. And your other guest was absolutely right. We have to reexamine the relationship between African Americans and whites in this country.
Jasmine Koenig, I certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Yamiche had to go. Folks, this is a graphic somebody put together there on social media. Go ahead and pull it up. Murdered by police, Diallo, Stansberry, Bell, Grant, Ford, Brown, Crawford, Romali Graham. That says a whole lot. I'm Roland Martin. This is News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Welcome back to News One Now. Jasmine Koenig was just talking about black folks in our Arab Spring. Here are some photos that I found on Twitter with his sisters holding this sign, Negro Spring. But let me show you this this cartoon here that's pretty interesting that was in the News Journal. So you have an African-American son holding a paper up to his dad that says Trayvon. He says, I'm sorry, son, but that's just Sanford. Then he holds up Jordan Davis. I'm sorry, son, but that's just Florida. He holds up Eric Garner. I'm sorry, son, but that's just New York. And finally, his son holds a paper, Michael Brown, I'm sorry, son, but that's just America.
I think it would be a really fun thing if China or Putin or somebody tried to give aid to the people of Ferguson, like humanitarian aid drops.
Keep in mind, remember during Hurricane Katrina, America did not take kindly when Fidel Castro offered doctors, and also Venezuela leader Hugo Chavez did the exact same thing.
Right. But you saw the UN made a statement saying that the protesters should be guarded. That was something that happened yesterday. UN secretary came out and said, look, the protesters need to be protected. Their rights need to be protected.
Well, a militarized police force will do that.
Right.
But see, many of us, think back to Malcolm X. Before he was killed, he was talking about going to the United Nations to talk about the treatment of African Americans.
Right.
And what often happens in this country, again, we love to comment on things happening in other countries. I'll never forget when, I think it was President Bush, when the Chinese leader came over, and it was the first President Bush, and we said, you know, we're going to educate you on, you know, human rights abuses. He said, well, let's talk about police brutality in America. And Americans get an attitude about that. And to Michael, your point, I think we have to understand that we ain't perfect.
We ain't perfect, and we have to deal with these issues. That's why we still have these cases that come up. And that last piece of that cartoon is so true. Sorry, son, this is America. This is the America that we still live in. And this generation that's out there protesting for the first time is really getting a taste of that America.
Right. And look, Michael, one of the things that just jumps out at me when you see this whole deal, and I make this point, and you can call it self-serving, whatever, but the other issue is that when you have mainstream media trying to have conversations about Ferguson and race, mainstream media's got to look in their own house and say, wait a minute, Ferguson is America. And when we talk about 53 police officers, 3 black in Ferguson. Well, how many white executives in mainstream media and how many black executives? It's a little hard for mainstream media to have a discussion about diversity and what's needed when they don't look like America themselves.
Exactly right.
And this is what I talk about in my book, Ghosts of Jim Crow. This is exactly what I identify. What's going on today reflects what occurred during the Jim Crow times, and we can change it. But we have to recognize we have a problem, and then we have to implement the solution, which is, of course, to empower the minority communities economically, politically, and educationally, and also to be more inclusive in our society, to increase diversity.
This is where the internet is a beautiful thing, because, of course, everybody's on that equal playing field with regard to reporting and getting their views out.
Live streams out, social media. The gatekeepers can't control it.
Exactly.
On Sunday, when CNN was showing John Walsh's show and MSNBC was in lockup, people were going online and saying, I want to see a live stream. What was happening?
Exactly right.
Well, let's see this Sunday how many blacks are on TV talking about our situation as opposed to whites talking about it.
But when a Ferguson happens, oh, they'll find black people. When a Rock happens, they can't find black people. Folks, tomorrow more coverage of what's happening in Ferguson right here on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.